Hello and welcome to The Blockchain and Us, where pioneers and thought leaders talk about their journey in blockchain technology, crypto assets, and the token economy. And I'm your host, Manuel Staggers. This episode is supported by 21 Lectures. 21 Lectures' mission is to bring more developers to the Bitcoin ecosystem with in-person courses. Lectured by world-renowned Bitcoin and Lightning developers, courses teach participants the fundamentals to work with blockchain technologies. To learn more, visit 21lectures.com. My guest today is Jan Kamenisch. Jan is head of research at Definity and director of the Definity Zurich Research Lab, and he also serves on Sovereign's Technical Governance Board. Before joining Definity, Jan was a principal research staff member at IBM Research in Zurich, where he led the privacy and cryptography research team and was a member of the IBM Academy of Technology. Jan is a leading scientist in the area of privacy and cryptography. He has published over 120 widely cited papers, was granted over 140 patents worldwide, and has received a number of awards for his work. And now to the conversation with Jan Kamenisch. Hi, Jan, and many thanks for taking time today.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Jan, you've been working as a researcher at IBM for almost 20 years, and now you switched to Definity, one of the few billion-dollar blockchain projects here in Switzerland. Why did you make this move?
Well, I guess I was surprised myself to some extent. Yeah, I mean, 20 years is a long time, and at some point when the opportunity came up, I sort of jumped on it because it's exciting, it's quite different, and I thought, okay, after 20 years doing something new might be good, refreshing. And also, of course, since there's a lot of crypto and I like to do cryptography, I should say, I like to do cryptographic protocols, and there's a lot of that in Definity. So it was a very, very nice opportunity, and I enjoyed a lot here.
Mm-hmm. What exactly are you working on currently at Definity?
So there's lots of sort of use cases for cryptographic protocols at all layers here. And so essentially we're looking at the whole system that Definity is going to build, look what the crypto problems there are, analyze the protocols that have already been implemented, make sure they all are secure, improve other protocols or design new protocols and improve those secure.
Mm-hmm. And what are the current research questions, you know, that you work on here?
Well, actually, right now, we put a lot of the research questions sort of on hold because we want to launch a platform. We want to make sure that platform is really secure. I mean, it has like financial value attached to the whole platform, and so therefore, I mean, you need to secure that. So security is important. Yeah, and so from that point of view, most of the questions are not so much traditional cryptographic research question, but really like analyzing the protocols, making sure that the security is all fine. Maybe coming up with some new security models because. How can you analyze some of those protocols? It's a bit different from maybe what you would do traditionally, where you sort of have, here's your normal, well-established security models, and now, you need to take some things a bit, have a different view on things, maybe some here and there to be sure that things are okay.
Mm-hmm. But that's quite different probably from what you've been doing at IBM. I mean, I guess there it was probably more of a research focus on fundamental research. I mean, that's my impression that I get. But how is your work different here from what you've been used to at IBM?
Well, in some sense, of course, it's different because we're building up a company. We're interviewing people a lot. We're looking for the right people to work with us, help us launch the platform. So that is of course different, just because of the scale. I mean, at IBM, I was also running research projects, hiring people, but just maybe like two people a year. If there was a new project here, it's more like 10 people a year, or like even more. I mean,
How big is your team?
Well, sort of growing constantly. I guess right now we're somewhere in with 12 people. But that's just the research side. There will be more people here in the Zurich office. We're growing up to maybe 50 people by the end of this year. But this will be engineers building the platform together with researchers. And so maybe one thing that is really different here from at IBM, we're sort of the researchers and engineers are under one roof here, and so there's much closer collaboration on building that stuff. So
less of an ivory tower sort of setup.
IBM wasn't that much of an ivory tower either. I mean, it still was a commercial entity, right? And so we did some of the research was fundamental, but other research, some of them was long-term research, but a lot of the research there is also geared towards product. So that point of view, that focus is the same. And also what I did at IBM, I was always concerned about practical protocol, something really that's also a real-world problem that can be used in products. But I think here, of course, it's much more direct, right? You know that if you solve a problem, then it will be in the product immediately because you're working with the engineers to make that real. Or if an engineer has come up with some solution to solve something, then you look at that directly, analyze it, and maybe improve it, or maybe you say, okay, it's fine, actually, a great solution. It's much more direct, obviously. It's also a much, much smaller company, right?
I think that's an interesting point that you brought up there. You spoke about the input, the direct feedback that exists between engineers and the researcher. And you already had that at IBM, here maybe more. But of course, if somebody's researching at a university, they don't have that at all. So how important do you think that feedback loop is for the quality of the research?
Well, I guess it can go both ways, right? If you have to... if you're completely disconnected, maybe you might solve some problems that are completely irrelevant, that don't have any applications, that might be nice academically because you're satisfied because you solved something in the nicest possible way. On the other hand, if you're somewhere where you have a closer relation, then of course you're much more focused on just solving exactly that problem. And maybe if there's some time pressure, maybe not in the nicest possible way. But I think at the end of the day, also, if you do more industrial research, you should always take enough time to solve it in the right way to make things whole. I mean, to really have like take a step back, think about, okay, so what am I doing here? Does this make sense? Is that how it should be? And then... because only that will make sure that that what you build will really be secure. Because if you're too much down into it, you might miss a lot of things. And so I think that's still the same. So I think at the end of the day, it's not a huge difference. I mean, universities have to do projects as well. They have to get some external funding increasingly as well. So I don't think... like if I would say like the difference between IBM and the university research, it's probably this very, very close. I mean, right. I mean, if you're in a company, you might be closer to getting stuff into products. But on the other hand, at university, you can do like spin-off startups. So probably at the end of the day, as long as you're doing research and publishing papers, it's probably the same in both places.
Mm-hmm. Let's say you work on a new research project here at Definity. What is the process that this project would take over the course of its life?
I guess there's maybe not a typical way to go about it. I mean, there's of course a few things that I mean, like a research methodology that you learn also like when doing a PhD, that's sort of the, well, apart from having research results, it's the most important thing that you maybe have to learn how to look at things and how to solve things. But then how you come up with a research question might, of course, differ quite a bit, right? You might walk home or walk to work and then start to think, okay, right, actually, there we have an issue, there's a problem here that we need to solve. And so somehow the first step is always, I guess, recognizing that there is a problem, something that you want to address. It could be something that is immediate because an engineer tells you, look, I don't really know how to solve. It could be because they did something, I have a solution, and then you think about, well, that solution actually doesn't really solve the problem. So I think the first, probably the most important thing is really to recognize the problem, to see how does the problem look like, what is the problem really, what are we trying to solve, and what is probably the most difficult is, I mean, what kind of security features do you want to have? Because, you have to get in some sort of a paranoid mind as well, right? You have to think, okay, what could people do here? What could people... what could go wrong? So you not only have to figure out what it should do, but you also have to figure out what shouldn't be possible. Right? So that's the most difficult part probably. And also like what people probably underestimate very often, right? Because that's the solution you think, but the whole process to really clearly phrase the problem is a big part of the research thing. And then obviously you need to find a solution, you need to solve that, you need to find a way, a cryptographic protocol or another protocol, a mechanism to solve your problem. And then you have to show that this problem actually not only solves the problem from like a functionality point of view, it does what it should do, because that you can just test, but you also need to show that it is secure, so that all the other things that you thought should not be possible can't happen, and that again is a whole new challenge, and sometimes you need to go back and realize, okay, I can't quite solve the problem that way, and so I have to rephrase the problem, so then it's like a cycling back and forth. But I think that's sort of the typical approach that you always have to do. Yeah, and then you of course have other things that you go back to an engineer and say, look, here's how I think we could solve that. Actually, it works out, it's secure. But then you might have overlooked some like realization issues. You realize, well, it's not practical at all. You couldn't implement that for this reason. So there's other issues as well that you need to cover. So it's a very interesting but also very satisfying job, right? I mean, you can be very satisfied if you solve a hard problem that you came up with. So mm-hmm. There's a lot of recognition there, I guess, as well.
Mm-hmm. Cool. What's a recent hard problem that you solved? One that's maybe particularly interesting.
Well, I can maybe tell you a bit from the time at IBM there, right? I mean, I think that's easier to talk. A lot of the things that we solved at Infinity right now, I mean, we're still building the system, so we can't talk about all the things right now. We'll do eventually. I mean, of course, it is important that you always publish your security, your crypto protocols, that other people can do them as well. But I think still one of the things that I liked a lot is my work on identity and privacy, preserving identity, which... I guess I also hope to be useful to Definity at some point, but it sort of shows
what exactly was that? I mean, that project.
Right. So the idea there is that if you use your identity online, you quite often reveal more information than necessary. So one of my favorite two examples is. For those who are old enough to remember, when you rented like a movie at a video rental store, right? I mean, you could like watch all the movies, then you would go with the empty box to the clerk, and the clerk would say, "Well, for this movie you have to be over 12, for this movie you have to be over 18," And of course, you also have to be a member, right? And so you would have to show your membership card, you would have to show your identity card, you would verify those things. But of course, at the end of the day, he wouldn't remember any of that. Well, maybe he would note down which movie you rented, so you have to give it back. But if you do the same online, of course, if you do the same thing digitally, I mean, all this information gets stored on a server somewhere. And that server has to be like online 24/7 because they want to rent out movies, right? So it has to be highly available, and that's very hard to protect. So you leave, and if you send all your data there, you leave it there, and that makes you very vulnerable because now potentially everybody who hacks that server, or if they're not careful with backups, that information spreads, and digital information is very hard to keep at a place because it's easily copied and so on. And actually, people want to make backups so they don't lose it because you can also easily lose it. And so what I was working on is sort of a typical crypto problem in some sense. Well, how can I convince online that the movie rental service that I have all these properties without actually revealing all the data? Because that's all they needed to know, right? Do you have the sufficient attributes over 12 subscription at the right kind? And they didn't know the exact values. Just they need to know that that's satisfied. And so what we did, my colleagues coming up with some crypto protocol that they could just transmit that single bit of information. Yes, I am allowed to rent that movie without revealing all that other data. And it seems very paradoxical. How could you do that? I mean, if you want to learn whether somebody is older than 12, you need to see their birth date, right? But that's the cool thing that crypto allows you to do. It allows you to sort of run a cryptographic protocol such that at the end of the day, you would be convinced that I'm older than 12, but you wouldn't see my birth date or anything. You just would know that I got an identity card from the government issued that has a birth date on it that is further in the past than 12 years. And so I can run a cryptographic proof protocol with you, and that convinces you of that. And I guess at Definitive, we're doing similar things in some sense. It's cryptographic protocols, make sure that everything was done okay without revealing too much information. So you need to protect things at the end of the day. Exactly. So I guess that's another buzzword today, apart from blockchain. I think everything is zero knowledge, and then people are happy about that. But indeed, so that's why I guess this whole blockchain world, I guess we wouldn't even say Definitive is blockchain. It's like an internet computer, a distributed computer. So distribution is really a way to make things secure without at a cheaper cost, right? I mean, you can make a single server secure, you can try to lock it in, you can try to disconnect it from the network and all of this stuff. But that's very costly. So a much easier way is to distribute that computation such that unless like a majority of these computers are hacked, then the overall system is still good. Mm-hmm. And that's really what if you want to say blockchain in some sense is all about. It's about distribution of trust so that you can protect the system in a cheaper way at the end of the day.
Now we're already talking about what Definity does. What makes Definity special, you know, in comparison maybe to other blockchain projects around?
So what I really like about Definity, what was one of the reasons that I joined, was that it's unique in terms of the vision, right? There's a vision. We're going to build an internet computer. It's like an online computer that's highly available, that's highly secure, much better than anything that exists so far. So I like this. There's a vision. That's what we want to achieve. There's other projects that they're much more limited in scope. Which, of course, on the one hand, it's much harder to build this, but I mean, it's always good to be very ambitious because I think that's the best way to achieve nice, excellent results.
Mm-hmm. The internet computer, that's what Definity wants to be.
Yes, so we want to build a sort of a secure computer by distributed system that runs computation distributedly, and so therefore making it secure, right? So if you have your own computer at home, and then of course there's issues like it may break down and you might lose all your data, right? And then you're cooked. So maybe already there you could say, okay, I'll just do two computers, always make sure that there's a backup. That's already a good idea. But still, it's still at your home. If there's a burglar coming and taking both computers, you're still cooked. And so when you quickly come up with, okay, maybe it's a better idea if I put that computer with like a friend of mine and stuff. So then you're getting towards the distributed system, right? And that's also what is nice from the cryptography point of view. It's a distributed system, a distributed cryptographic protocol. And that's really what the Fidit is about, right? We want to build a distributed computer that's very easy to use. You don't have to worry about the computer crashing ever. It won't crash. You don't have to worry about backups because it won't lose data. You don't worry how to upgrade it because it becomes too slow. It's all built in, right? So it's you don't have to do any maintenance. It will be highly secure. It won't lose data ever. There will no attacks be possible. So from that point of view, it's the best thing ever, right? Like everybody wants to have that, and we're going to build that.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back. This episode is supported by 21 Lectures. 21 Lectures' mission is to bring more developers to the Bitcoin ecosystem with in-person courses. Lectured by world-renowned Bitcoin and Lightning developers, courses teach participants the fundamentals to work with blockchain technologies. 21 Lectures covers cryptography, the structure of transactions and blocks and how they are chained, smart contract language, the Lightning Protocol, as well as software and toolkits to develop on top of the blockchain and Lightning. To learn more, visit 21lectures.com.
So from that point of view, it's the best thing ever, right? Like everybody wants to have that, and we're going to build that.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sure there's still several gaps, you know, between that vision and actually building it. And that's probably what you're working on.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I like it. It's good to have a vision. It's like, okay, let's go and land on the moon. And if there's your vision, eventually you build it, right? And then so there's a lot of things that you need to figure out. You need to do it right. You need to solve a lot of problems. And so that's really what is nice here, right? So we're having this vision. We're building towards that, of course, step by step, right? We just don't take a plane and try to fly to the moon, but we think about it. Okay, so good. We need to have a rocket. We need to have a moon lander. All these kind of things, right? We think, okay, so that's our goal. What do we need to build in order to go there? And that's what we're doing currently, right? So designing the overall system, then building it part by part.
Do you plan to publish the research?
So the work we're doing now, right? We're sort of analyzing these protocols. We're building, specifying the protocols. We make security proofs. And a lot of that stuff are novel protocols that obviously, and we need to publish them because, I mean, a good way to do security, not only by doing you need to do the proofs and the models correctly, all of that, but also other people should be able to read that because at the end of the day, we're all humans. We do make mistakes. And so, like, it needs to be peer reviewed. Other people need to look at that. Maybe they have ideas to improve that. So that's the normal research project or process that we're also heavily subscribing. So definitely, we will publish our results once they're ready. And also, right now, we're sort of focusing on building, launching our platform, and so. Like smoothing out, making all the papers, all the research we do readable, accessible. Mm-hmm. That's still like quite a bit of a step and shouldn't be underestimated. That like the time it takes to write something nicely, to explain it nicely, to make it understandable, it's very important too. And so we're going to do that, but just right now we're focusing on the content rather than the presentation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So, you know, maybe if we look beyond Definity at the whole blockchain space, at the whole crypto space, what do you think are important questions there that need answers?
Well, I think blockchain was was really great for cryptography, right? So it's a lot of like it's inspired a lot of new work, a lot of new thinking, and I guess it started by the Bitcoin protocol that people said, okay, well, this is a new approach how to design a distributed system, because normally you would say, okay, here's like N parties and they run a protocol together. But of course, then you always have to know who the emporis are, whereas in Bitcoin, sort of that problem was defined away, because whoever has a lot of computational power is one of the parties. And so that was totally a new approach. And I think that was really needed to ignite this distributed computing, and distributed systems, as well as cryptography. And that gave a lot of new input and opened up tons of new research questions. Some of them are, okay, so what are the exact security models here that we have to figure out how to go about proving things secure? What are the assumptions? Because some of the traditional models don't quite fit, or they're too strong, not allowing for good protocols. So there's a lot of like new questions there. There's a lot of other problems, like how do you build this system? You have to really dig down in the workings of all of these things in order to. The closer you look, the more problems you'll also find, right? So
well, security is one, right? And currently, I think many people are looking quite closely at security. But what's another one that, you know, blockchains need to become more, you know, useful and mainstream?
Well, right. I guess there's maybe like, what is the killer application? That's one, but I'm really more focused.
That's a big question.
Well, right. I mean, that shouldn't be the answer. And I think there will be tons of other applications if you think about, in some sense, any registry is already an application with how we could... a property register that right now are like very decentralized, but in another way, right? So it's like every community here runs their own system. Maybe they have it on a computer, maybe not. And if it's on a computer, is it secure? So that's like one application. They could just run like a blockchain kind type protocol and just have it more secure and more available at the same time. So I think there's really a ton of problems, ton of applications that you could just... it's sort of a much better solution to use a secure distributed system. But of course, also like how do you build these things? I mean, it's not so easy either. I mean, of course, for some of the things, maybe blockchain wouldn't be the right solution. For other things, it definitely is. But it like many things, right? It's not like a big hammer that you can just hit everything. You need to be a lot of more careful design. What are the properties that you need? Also, what should the platform provide, right? I mean, it's... if you have something like, maybe that's another view, how to look at something like a Definity platform, like a computer by itself, it's helpful, but maybe it's not all that helpful. It's more like if you look at the maybe Apple App Store, it's in some sense like the iPhone is also a computer, but it has this ecosystem around it, right? With you can put apps there, it has billing and all this. And at the end of the day, that's something what you need, right? You need like a whole ecosystem for things to really lift off, because with a better computer, if you just buy your computer and take it home, there's hardly anything you can do with it. And so you need to have like applications that are useful, and only then you can really build something. And I think that's like another, what is the right set of applications? How to build those applications. Well, I think we don't run out of work anytime soon, so there's a lot of stuff to be done.
Yeah, good point. There is obviously a big blockchain and crypto community, or that's quite global. But is there also a research community, you know, where you exchange ideas maybe with other researchers from other projects?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's the cryptography community. I mean, one of which I was lucky to be part the last 25 years. I mean, there's three big conferences every year, one in Santa Barbara in the US, or someplace in Europe, it varies, one in Asia Pacific, also that varies. That's where people meet, and there's more specialized conferences, some are specialized around blockchain, then there's distributed system conferences. I mean, research lives on those conferences, right? I mean, they meet, exchange results, and of course, some of that has been hijacked, if you want to say, by the blockchain movement. Some people already are a bit worrying about that. It takes,
some researchers, you mean?
Right. I mean, I guess you see people in t-shirts, crypto means cryptography. That word has been hijacked to mean like currencies rather than cryptography. But I think at the end, it's very good. It's a lot of inspiration. It's lively. And if people had asked me, should I do a PhD in crypto 10 years ago, I would still have said yes, but I would have warned, look, it's a tough field. The sort of the big problems have been solved. Well, maybe quantum computers is another thing that helped to ignite that as well. So it's there's a lot of new crypto questions that around quantum computers and how to protect against that threat if it ever exists. But I think this whole blockchain movement was definitely another big game changer, and that the cryptography community benefits a lot from that as well.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Jan, did you always want to work in research?
I guess, I don't know. I grew up on a tiny little farm in the mountains, right? So, and I worked like all summers, we worked on making hay and all that kind of stuff. So it was... But then, yeah, I liked math and I liked doing that. That was a big satisfaction. I also like to do and build other things. I mean, that's what you do on a farm as well, right? I mean, you fix your own things. And there's always stuff around because we always had some wood and nails and hammers and saws lying around so you could build stuff. So I always liked building stuff, but then... But at that time, I did not have a clue what research was about. I didn't even know that universities would exist. And, but then, I mean, I thought I would like to dig more into math. And so I went to gymnasium, did that. And then I wanted to study math, but then I decided electrical engineering would be more interesting because... I had this maybe stupid picture that math, you would end up as a teacher or like insurance mathematician, which sounded really boring, so I didn't want to do that. Right, but maybe at the end of the day, math would have been maybe the better choice as a cryptographer. Anyway, but then I sort of went into electrical engineering. But then I realized that I'm really more interested in research, discovering new things than just... well, I shouldn't say just. I mean, engineering is also a nice job, but I sort of figured it's more of the same. So you apply the skills that you know, but you don't really learn new things. At least that's what I thought at the time. So I thought, like, no, I really want to go into research to discover new stuff, to solve that. And so, yeah, I ended up doing research, and somehow... By coincidence, more or less, I ended up doing crypto, but I really love that. So it's a great field. You can solve these sort of paradoxical problems. You solve things that you thought was not possible to start with, and then actually you solve that. So that's very satisfactory.
Mm-hmm. Cool. As a researcher, what, in your view, are the most important skills?
Persistence. You should not give up. I think that's something. Yeah, you have to have some stamina there. But also, you need to be able to structure problems, to analyze things. Right? You need to be able to dissect things. Sort of question yourself all the time. Is this the right way to think about it? I think it's a hard job in a sense. You just can't go home and switch your brain off. It always sort of follows you, right? It's maybe more an attitude than a job, right? So it's like a way of living in some sense. You always think about, okay, your problem. It's always somewhere in your mind. Right, I guess your family has to bear with you.
Can you
part of your mind is still thinking about work?
Yeah, can you learn that skill, or do you think that's impossible to learn?
I don't know. I mean, there's different approaches. I mean, there's a certain curiosity I think you have to have, right? I mean, of course, there's a lot of things you can learn about how to do that. I mean, what's the procedure? So some things you can learn, and I guess with many things, you have to have a talent, and then you can learn things. And if you have a big talent, but you don't learn the right things, you're also not good. If you learn all the things, but you don't have a talent, maybe it can maybe go quite far. And maybe there's also different kinds of talents. And
Doing things right instead of doing the right things.
Yeah, stuff. I guess I have to do both. If you want to be successful in research, you also have to do the right things, because if you do something that nobody else is interested in, you will be frustrated as well, because nobody cares about your results at the end of the day. So there's a bit of that as well. I mean, at the end of the day, somebody needs to pay your salary, and if nobody's interested in what you're doing, it's probably also very hard.
Right, and for that, it probably needs more than a curious mind to be a successful researcher, I guess.
Yeah, but I think that's also something that you can learn, or also depends, right? I mean, it depends on where you are. Could you be somebody coaching you? Depending, when if you're just the right, greatest research but don't know how to sell your stuff, then maybe you need to go somewhere where there's somebody that can sell your stuff. But I think it varies. There's a whole spectrum there, right? I mean, if you look at the research communities, there's all kind of people, and they're all successful for different reasons and different.
Cool. What are you in your work or also in your life? What are you currently learning?
Oh, I mean, I guess the nice thing about research is there's always like new stuff to learn. But of course, now being at Definity, it's a startup. It's quite a new life. Also IBM was an American company. It wasn't US before, but now it's this Silicon Valley group that is quite different. It's also refreshing. And but of course, it can take it with a sense of humor. See like how things go there. I guess I think everybody, in some sense, regardless of what you do, you always, if you're curious, you always learn new things. And but now I'm very lucky. So it's different environments, and things are changing all the time. It has its downside as well. when you wake up, things are not as they used to be, or things change. It's really exciting, and there's so many things going on, so many opportunities to learn. So the days are almost too short to deal with all of that.
Unless you don't sleep.
Yeah, you need to have that, otherwise you don't run very long.
Unfortunately. Where do you think all of this is going? I mean, either at Definity or also in the blockchain research space, what's on the horizon there?
Well, I don't have like a crystal ball, right? But at the end of the day, distributed computing as a solution to make things more secure, cheaper, that won't go away. That's something we'll start. And think, of course, we are somewhere on that typical hype curve. I don't think that blockchain or distributed computing in that sense is different from anything else. But it's the world has realized this is a promising technology. There's a lot of benefits on doing that. So that is there, and we'll see applications in many areas. It's going to be used. We'll have the internet computer. Everybody's going to use the internet computer because it's so nice to use that, not to have to worry about where computers are. Of course, when and what the timeline of that, we'll see. I mean, we don't know yet either. Right? I mean, but things are looking very good, so and we're very positive.
Mm-hmm. Jan, this was great. Thanks a lot for taking
time. Well, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us today. More info on our guests and our sponsors is in the show notes of this episode and on the podcast website, theblockchainandus.com. To help people find this podcast, it's important that you download, subscribe, and give it a top rating and review on iTunes or on the podcast platform of your choice. I'm Manuel Staggers, and I thank you very much for listening.